Welcome to episode 57 of the Fredcast and stage 1 of the Amgen Tour of California for 2007. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. Welcome to stage 1 of the Amgen Tour of California for 2007 and the Fredcast's on-site coverage for the entire week. Today we're going to be talking a little bit about the prologue and a lot about stage 1, including the incredible crash and the very dramatic finish of stage 1 here in Santa Rosa, California. I think you're going to enjoy this coverage, so sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. Fredcast is brought to you by Cambria Bicycle Outfitter, providing quality products and unparalleled customer service to the cycling community for over 20 years. And here's another reason to shop at Cambria. Use the promo code found in tonight's show notes at www.thefredcast.com for 20% off your entire order at Cambria Bike. Cambria Bicycle Outfitter, they outfit the world. Welcome to the 2007 Amgen Tour of California. You know, this is the second year of this race, and it's already become the United States' preeminent international cycling stage race. Of course, the winner of last year's inaugural Amgen Tour of California was Floyd Landis from Team Phonak. And of course, he's not here to defend his title this year, as he's awaiting the disposition of his doping case. And what would a cycling race be without just a little bit of controversy to get it all started? And this year's Amgen Tour of California is no different. Just prior to the start of this year's race, there were reports in the national and international media that last year's Amgen Tour of California officials failed to test for the doping product EPO. What you may not understand is that EPO is made by the same company that is the title sponsor for the Tour of California, and that's Amgen. Now, the stories make it sound like somebody specifically said, let's not test for EPO, or somebody specifically said, let's leave EPO out of the testing of our athletes in the 2006 Tour of California. Now, that's not exactly what happened. According to spokespeople from the organizers of the event, AEG, the doping protocols that were used in the 2006 Amgen Tour of California were those that were provided to them by the UCI, and they didn't deviate from what was provided to them by the UCI. To do so might mean risking a UCI sanction. This year, however, the organizers of the event have specifically said that EPO must be tested for in those athletes who were tested during the Amgen Tour of California. They said that they want to make sure that everyone understands that the Amgen Tour of California is a clean event. And I think that as we start off this year's cycling season, there can be nothing more important than making sure that the fans, that the media, and the general public understand that cycling has an interest in making sure that its athletes ride and race clean. And it's going to start right here at this year's Amgen Tour of California. Well, the race started on Sunday with a 3.1-kilometer time trial from the Embarcadero up to the top of Coit Hill or Coit Tower. And this is the same course that was used last year. And last year's race was won by Levi Leipheimer. At the time, Levi was a member of the Gerolsteiner team, and he won it in a time of 4 minutes, 53.43 seconds. And that seemed like a blistering pace at the time. This year, the seventh rider out of the gate was Jason Donald from Team Slipstream Chipotle from Brighton, Colorado. Jason tore up the course with a time of 4 minutes and 50 seconds. The rest of the Peloton, remember, he started seventh. The rest of the Peloton continued to try to best that time and simply couldn't do it. Now, unfortunately, I wasn't able to be in San Francisco for the prologue, so I was watching it on Versus live as it was happening. And as we got toward where there were just a couple of people left in the start house, Phil Liggett mused, and nobody challenged him on it, but Phil Liggett mused about whether or not they should start suspecting that perhaps the timekeepers had gotten it wrong with Jason's time. Then came rider number 144, the last rider to go that day, wearing number one because he won the stage last year, Levi Leipheimer from Team Discovery Now. Talk about tearing up the course. 4 minutes and 49 seconds to beat Jason Donald and to win the prologue of the Amgen Tour of California for 2 years in a row, allowing him to once again head out of San Francisco for stage one today on his way to his hometown of Santa Rosa, California, wearing the Amgen Tour of California golden jersey as the race's leader in the general classification. Well, this morning, woke up to a beautiful day in San Francisco. You don't see many days like this, especially this time of year in San Francisco. No fog, not a cloud in sight. And many of the race officials ended up staying near the San Francisco International Airport. And today's stage began in Sausalito, which is on the other side of the bay. You have to go through downtown San Francisco and across the Golden Gate Bridge in order to get to Sausalito, which is a really quaint little town right on the bay. Now, normally when you come to San Francisco, if you want to get to the other side of the bay in any reasonable period of time, you need to do it really, really early in the morning, or you need to do it really late in the afternoon. But here in the United States, today is President's Day, celebrating George Washington and Abraham Lincoln's birthdays. Today was an amazing day for traffic in San Francisco. Getting from San Francisco International Airport on over to Sausalito was a breeze, and you could actually enjoy being in downtown San Francisco because there was no traffic. And of course, as I said, by the time we all got over to Sausalito, the sun was up. It was a gorgeous day, and it looked like it was going to be a beautiful day of racing. And indeed, it was. The Peloton started just after 11 o'clock this morning, after all of the riders signed in and were interviewed. And then the Peloton did three laps, neutral laps, where nobody's really racing. They're really parade laps for the crowd that's assembled. And there was quite a crowd in Sausalito this morning. After those three laps, they then started out on the race course. And one of the things that you may have seen if you've been watching any of the television coverage is that CSC, Computer Science Corporation, of course, CSC is one of the Pro Tour sponsors. They've been talking about how several of the riders, especially the race leaders, are wearing GPS units while they're out there on the course, so that you can actually go onto the web and you can follow the race leader, so that if you're sitting at your desk at the office and you just want to know how things are going, you can be getting live race reports as they're happening in almost real time right on your computer screen. I think it's a fantastic service. The problem is, as soon as the race began this morning, Jason Donald's GPS just wasn't feeling right and wasn't fitting right, and he got rid of it. Somewhere in the middle of the course, the same thing happened to Levi Leipheimer. So I think that they're going to have a little bit of adjustments that they're going to be needing to do to this program. But I think it's a great idea, and it's one whose time has come. I've seen these GPS units. I'll try to get a picture of it and put it on the website and maybe talk to some of the folks who are involved in putting this telemetry out on the web, because I think it's really cool. But the GPS units are surprisingly small, and I think that I'm sure that over the next day, probably tonight, they're figuring out better ways to adhere these to the riders so that the riders keep them on, so that you're actually tracking the riders and not their support vehicles. Well, the next amazing thing that happened was once we left the town of Sausalito, there's a short portion where you need to get on Highway 101, which is one of the more busy highways in the area. And the California Highway Patrol had done an amazing thing. It was the first time in my life I'd ever been on Highway 101 with not a single car on the road. It was really great. Another thing that I noticed that I commented to somebody that I wish was out there every time I went for a ride. You know, when you're out there on a ride and there's a pothole up ahead and you don't see it and you hit it, and 9 times out of 10 you get a really bad flat. Well, if you're in the professional Peloton, every single hazard on the road is marked for you with this nice bright orange chalk. It's actually spray chalk, so it's like a spray paint, but it will come off the road. It won't be there forever. So imagine riding down the road on one of your training rides and knowing where every single hazard is on the pavement because somebody's come along before you the night before and marked every hazard. I thought that was great. Now, for me, the first thing that I noticed, because I was riding in the race caravan today, I was riding with the race's technical director, Chuck Hodge, and we'll get to him in a moment, but riding in the race caravan, it's really very much like a dance. Everyone has a role. Somebody leads and somebody follows, and everyone knows what their role is. Everyone's got a radio. Some people have multiple radios, and it really is very much like a dance. It was very interesting to see. So that when you watch one of these stage races, whether it's the Tour of California, the Tour of Georgia, the Tour de France, or the Giro d'Italia, no matter what it is, it may look like chaos to you out there on the road with all those motorcycles and police officers and photographers, but it is very, very well orchestrated, and I was very impressed with the way that those things happen. The next thing that impressed me was, you know, I have a lot of people that listen to this show. There's many, many thousands of you every week, and I appreciate it very much. But quite frankly, I had no idea there were so many cyclists in the world, because what was great and a wonderful thing to see was that as you were out there driving the course, or if you're in the peloton, riding the course, there were spectators lining the roads everywhere you went. It didn't matter whether you were in a town or you were out in the middle of nowhere. There were spectators on the course, ringing their cowbells and slamming those boomsticks together to make noise and to support the cyclists. And what was the most interesting was so many of those people were cyclists, whether they were wearing team kit from a junior development team or perhaps a master's team, we passed by many of those today, or whether they were just wearing their everyday cycling apparel. There were a ton of cyclists out there on the road cheering along the peloton. And I'm not just talking about people who are out there on bikes with banana seats and fringe on the handlebars. These were hardcore cyclists. You could tell by not only by the way they were dressed and by their bicycles, there was a lot to drool about on those bikes, but also just by the way that they carried themselves and by their muscular legs and all those other things that you know when you see somebody who's a cyclist, you can identify them. And that was very, very impressive to me. Well, today's stage was 97.2 miles long, and it included two King of the Mountain climbs. The first, right out of the starting gate, right after leaving Sausalito, we started climbing Mount Tamalpais. And if you're not familiar with Mount Tam, that is the birthplace of what we know today as modern mountain biking. This was a Category 4 climb, and it was not just scenic, but it was quite an intense and steep climb. Following Mount Tam, there were three sprints for time bonuses today, and then a Category 3 climb in the Coleman Valley before finally coming up to Santa Rosa, California for three laps around town, and then, of course, the final sprint finish. One of the things we noticed out there on the race course today was the fact that the peloton seemed to be going a bit slower than was originally estimated. And the reason for that, quite simply, an extremely strong headwind all the way until the riders turned inland on the final leg towards Santa Rosa. And the riders at some points were going very slow, where a lot of the race caravan was having to stop literally in the middle of the road and wait for the riders to catch up. There were a couple of breaks today, nothing that ended up being very successful. And unfortunately, there was one crash at mile 70. There was another crash later, which we'll get to in a moment. But at about mile 70, Dave Zabriskie went down and ended up leaving the peloton and dropping out of this year's Tour of California. The medical director of the Tour of California had some comments about that at the press conference following today's race, and this is what he had to say about Dave Zabriskie.
Who approximately 70 miles into the race had a moderate speed accident and hit his head. He was fine and alert at the scene, but a little bit foggy, and attempted to get back on his bicycle and made the decision himself that it probably wasn't best to go on. So he was transported by ambulance to local hospital for further testing. His tests have come back negative, but he's out of the race.
So that was the official word this afternoon from Dr. Ramin Modaber, who's the race medical director for the Amgen Tour of California. Really a bit of sad news for everyone involved in the race, because I think Dave Zabriskie was probably a pre-race favorite, and to see him drop out in this way, obviously it's reminiscent of other crashes that he's had in the past. We hearken back to the Tour de France a couple of years ago when Dave crashed in that team time trial after having such a great start to the Tour de France. And to see him drop out like this today, also very bad news. As one of the photographers today put it, I was listening to them as we were waiting for the podiums to begin, Dave's really become the hard luck kid, and it's very sad to see him drop out in this way. And by the way, my apologies in advance about the audio quality of some of these clips I'm going to be bringing to you from the press conference. This is my first press conference, folks, so there's a little learning curve here. Bear with me, it's going to get better over the next couple of days. Thank you in advance. Well, following Dave Zabriskie's crash, the peloton moved ever closer to the city of Santa Rosa. And when we rolled into the city of Santa Rosa, I talked about the crowds before, and I talked about the crowds that were in San Francisco yesterday, but I was overwhelmed by the number of people, the sheer mass of humanity lining the streets of the city of Santa Rosa. Not a big city by comparing it to other cities in the United States, but there were people everywhere. They were probably 6 or 8 deep on the sidewalks. They were on top of buildings. They were standing on top of newspaper racks and mailboxes. Any space that they could find, they were standing on. I saw a parking structure where, again, there were people 3 or 4 deep, 4 stories tall. It was incredible. And one of the things that they do to make sure that the fans in each of these cities get a chance to see the bike racers is they do circuits, like they did earlier this morning in the city of Sausalito, where, except there, that was neutral racing. So really, it was just a pack warming up, moving through town. Here, this was full-on professional bike racing at its finest. They passed the finish line and started lap number 1. They came back through, and as they were getting ready to start lap number 2, a horrific crash occurred. I happened to be standing in the crowd, literally right in front of where the crash occurred. I happened to be looking away for a moment. I heard a very loud noise. I looked at the street, and there were colors and metals and carbon fibers everywhere. There, it looked to me like there were about 20 riders who all went down literally right in front of me. I got some amazing pictures. I'll post all of my pictures online. You should see those shortly after I post this show. It was a massive humanity. And then it was a jigsaw puzzle trying to untangle everyone. Finally, the riders got up. They did bring one ambulance up for one individual, and you'll hear about how he's doing in a moment. But every single one of those riders, including the one who they brought the ambulance up for, got back on their bike and finished the stage. But here was the problem. Who was in that group that went down? None other than race leader and hometown hero, Levi Leipheimer. Levi was right in front of me, and the look on his face, once he realized that he was basically okay, yes, he's got some road rash, but once he realized that he was basically okay, you could see the look in his eyes and how he wanted desperately to get back on his bike and get back on the road. And here's Levi's account of what happened and how he got back out on the course.
Well, anyway, coming into the laps, we did one circuit. It was incident-free. And then right there at the start-finish, coming in with 2 to go, I had just made a surge to move up on the right side, and I was in the first, I believe I was in the first 15 riders. I mean, it felt like I was right at the front, and all of a sudden, I could see a T-Mobile rider had lost, he had hit one of the metal balls on the road, and he had lost his hand off the handlebars, went over the handlebars, and fell to the right, which triggered a massive pileup. And, you know, when you crash like that, especially when you're in a leader's jersey, the first thing you can think about is getting back on your bike as quickly as possible. And you know, I was on my feet right away. I don't even remember hitting the ground, but I have the scars here to prove it. But I got back on my feet, and I was trying to get my bike up, but there was a few riders on top of my bike, a few of their bikes on top. And I was yelling at them, like, get up, get up. You know, I felt like they were a little bit relaxed about the situation. I was trying to motivate them to get off the ground. So once I got my bike I tried to just get on it right away, but then I see that that was impossible. I had to straighten out my levers, and my rear brake was completely blocking the rear wheel. I had to get the chain on the chain ring, and I had George and Jason were there trying to help me do it. At one point, I thought about taking Jason's bike, but he's too big. So I finally got my bike going, and it felt like forever. I mean, it felt like 3 minutes I was staying there. And we started going, and George and Yvonne really started to, they really started to ride hard to bring me back. And luckily, there was a couple of the liquid gas riders who were in the same boat. And we started ripping around the circuit, and we caught up to a group.
So just a couple of clarifications there from what Levi was talking about. First of all, he talked about the metal balls in the road. Now, here in California, we have this thing called the BOTS dot. If you're not familiar with it, you've probably heard comedians talk about braille driving, and that's simply closing your eyes, and as you go over into another lane, you hear and that's your wheels hitting the BOTS dots. And those were invented by a Dr. Bot, believe it or not. And these are to be able to show drivers where the lanes are. And so these are all over the streets and highways here in California. And as Levi noted in the press conference later, we don't have snow here, so we can put these things down and snow plows won't ruin them. And the problem was, of course, that this T-Mobile rider hit one of those and he went down. Now, the second clarification is, you heard him talk about George and Yvonne. And of course, he's talking about George Hincappy and Yvonne Basso. One of the concerns that was quoted in the press several months ago was that when Discovery signed Yvonne Basso, what was reported was that there was some upsetness on Levi Leipheimer's part, or at least by those who are supporters of Levi Leipheimer, in that Yvonne Basso would end up being the team leader and Levi Leipheimer would therefore have to support him. In this race, at least for this week, and we'll see what happens the rest of the season, it's George Hincappy and Yvonne Basso who are having to work for Levi Leipheimer. And so Levi went on to say that one of the reasons he was able to get back up and into a main group in this race was because George and Yvonne had to do all the work for him and help pull him forward into the race after that crash. After a very, very long look at the photo finish results, it was finally determined that the winner of today's stage was Graham Brown from Rabobank. Second place went to Greg Henderson of T-Mobile, and third to Alan Davis of Discovery. The great sprinter Tor Hushovd from Norway and Credit Agricole was in fourth, and in fifth place, Freddie Rodriguez from the United States. But then there was still a question. The question was, who would be wearing the golden jersey at the start of tomorrow's stage two? Because after that crash, what was the time difference between the riders who finished before race leader Levi Leipheimer and the rest of the peloton? We waited a very long time before the announcer finally gave us the decision that was made. And here's what the announcer told the crowd.
Ladies and gentlemen, at the great races of the world, including the AMJN Tour of California, there are a group of officials. They are known as the College of Commissaires, and it is their job to tackle any tough decisions that result during a race. We have one of those situations that developed in the race today. And very near the end of the race, there was that horrible crash that basically changed everything. It is in the power of the College of Commissaires to make decisions. They made a decision today that said that the group entering those last circuits all have received the same time. And therefore, Santa Rosa, we bring on the current leader of the AMJN Tour of California, Levi Leipheimer.
Well, I think you can tell by the crowd's reaction that the people here in Santa Rosa, Northern California in general, are very firmly behind Levi Leipheimer. There were signs all over the route, the majority of them saying, "Go Levi." People wrote in chalk on the hills, on the streets, "Go Levi." And so for him to be declared the winner today was very, very much appreciated by the crowd that was assembled there in Santa Rosa. Now, let me explain exactly what it is that the race commissaires did. There's a rule, a regulation in the UCI, and it's written right here in the guide to this year's Amgen Tour of California. It's Article 9 of the race regulations, entitled Race Incidents Occurring in the Last 3 Kilometers. And it says, in the case of a duly noted fall, puncture, or mechanical problem after passing the 3 kilometer to go point, the rider or riders involved shall be credited with the time of the rider or riders in whose company they were riding at the moment of the accident. In other words, if you and I are riding together with a group of 20 other people, and you and I get in a crash within the last 3 kilometers of the race, once we finish, our time, even though we may have finished 2 or 3 minutes after the 20 people that we were riding with, our time will end up being credited as being the same time as those 20 people we were riding with. Now, if you're following carefully, you may know that this crash occurred with about 7 kilometers to go in today's race. So how is it that the race commissaires were able to change the rules in this way? Quite simply, because they have the power to do so. It's a jury of, I believe, 5 individuals who are very senior UCI officials, and they do have the power to make a call like this. And quite frankly, I think that it was the sportsmanlike thing to do, and that's one of the things I love about the sport of bicycle racing, because this is a sportsmanlike overall. Forget the doping and all that other stuff. This is a very sportsmanlike athletic event. Give you an example. Listening to race radio today, you can hear them saying that the riders are stopping for what they call a natural. It simply means that they have to relieve themselves. And when they do, the peloton slows down until they're finished and they catch back up and then the racing begins again. That's what I mean by being sportsmanlike. In the old days, they would call it being gentlemanly. And since this is a peloton full of men, I think we can say that this is the gentlemanly thing to do. And that's why they made this call. I don't think it's controversial. It didn't seem controversial at the time. It seemed like the right thing to do. In the press conference, nobody was talking about a protest. Of course, they are well within their rights to protest if they'd like to, and we'll find out tomorrow whether or not that happened. But as of right now, I think it was the right decision to make. And so going into tomorrow's stage 2, Levi Leipheimer will be in the golden jersey once again. At the post-race press conference, Levi Leipheimer reflected on the decision that was made on circuit racing and on whether or not this is really the way that he'd like to stay in the golden jersey.
No, because I think we have to remember that circuits in a race of this caliber, it's not very common for this exact reason. But it's very necessary, because you saw the crowd today and the amount of people that came out to support the race. They deserve a show, and they deserve to see some great bike racing. And doing these 3 laps gives them that. But the risk of having a huge pileup on such a tight, narrow circuit with these metal balls everywhere, the risk of the crash is very high. So I think with those factors involved, that's why the commissaire came to that decision. These circuits are not common in a race of this caliber. I'll say it again. And I think they're necessary because it gives the crowd a great experience of bike racing. I mean, you saw today. Today was fantastic. I mean, for the crowd to come out like that in the U.S. is really special. And I think we need to keep the circuits, because they love to see it. But we don't want the Tour of California to be decided by a massive pileup like that. I don't think anybody does.
So speaking of the massive pileup, there was one other rider that was injured today and had to be taken to the hospital, and this was what I alluded to earlier in the show. And here's the race medical director again giving an update on that rider, and he was the one that was the most severely injured in the crash. And I've got some pictures of him right after the crash that I'll be putting on the website in a few moments. But in the meantime, here's an update on his condition following that horrific crash near the finish.
Second rider is Nicholas Gates. He was the most severely injured of the riders involved in a large crash at the start-finish of the circuits. And he was able to get back on his bicycle and finish the race, but on an evaluation at his team bus afterwards, it's felt best that he be transported also to a local hospital for further testing. Those tests are going on as we speak.
Nicholas Gates is from the Predictor Lotto team. He's an Australian rider, and I saw him in that crash. I saw him immediately afterwards. He seemed to me to be very seriously injured, and the crowd gave him a big cheer when he got back on his bike, and he did finish the stage. We'll let you know tomorrow what his status is and whether or not he'll be on the start line. Well, that's going to do it for the actual race coverage of today's event. I do have two interviews that I'd like to play for you. The first is with, well, my host for the day, and someone who's been very helpful to me in making my arrangements here at the Tour of California. That's Chuck Hodge. Chuck is the technical director for the Amgen Tour of California. And at first, I didn't know exactly what a technical director was. And so I spent some time with him today interviewing him, finding out exactly what it is he does. And I think that you're going to find that without a guy like Chuck Hodge, this event would not occur. Here's what Chuck Hodge does. I'm riding stage one of today's race with Chuck Hodge. Chuck is the technical director of the Tour of California. He's also a Fredcast listener and got me some amazing access to the race this year. So, Chuck, do me a favor. Tell me what it is that a technical director does.
Well, we, me and Eric Smith, my assistant technical director, are responsible for the development of the course in conjunction with the race director. And also the security, medical, the officials, quite a few items within the race coordinate basically starting a year before race time.
So you can hear the radio traffic in the background. How many radios are here in this car?
Right now we've got one, two, three going and one in my ear, and not to say I'm actually listening to all of those.
And if he's listening to me, and of course I've got my radio and there's a couple of cell phones in the car as well. You mentioned the development of the race course. What does that mean?
Well, what we do, there's a whole process involved with how we develop the race. First, starting with the most critical points, our start and finish cities. And there is a process in place to select those, a bid process. When those are really done with input from me and many other people, we really actually start looking at the exact roads we're wanting to use. And depending on what we want to end up with the race course, the level of difficulty, work with the local government, CHP, Caltrans, and try to come up with a compelling course that is also manageable for us.
So I think that's something that a lot of people wouldn't realize. The cities actually bid to be a start and a finish location for a race like this.
Yeah, we've been lucky, especially this year, with just some great start and finish cities. They put together a local organizing committee that works in close conjunction with us and really takes on the role of race management in their community. Today's stage from Sausalito to Santa Rosa, just two great cities, very excited about it. Done a great job for us.
Now, one of the things that we've been doing as we've been driving along is you've been talking to all sorts of different people. You're in charge of a lot of different people out here today. What would you say is the most challenging part of your job on race day?
Really, the most challenging part on race day is putting out the last-minute fires you don't think about. I'm lucky enough to have a great team everywhere, everybody from CHP to our motor guys to our officials who really take on their little part of the race and run it. And I'm just there hopefully to help them out and help them do their jobs well.
Okay, so in a race like this or the Tour of Georgia, what's the worst fires you've had to put out in a race like this?
Probably on the road. Last year at Tour de Georgia on stage one, we actually had a high-speed police chase coming at the race and got within 45 seconds of the event. No one ever really knew about it because we had a good plan in place to manage it. And then several days later at Tour de Georgia, the same year, it was a windy day, and we had a tree fall in front of the course 7 miles ahead of the race, and it was gone in sawdust by the time the race came. So we can't always put them out, but we try.
So in a way, you're like the course Houdini, if you will.
Well, not always me. It was really having great staff in place, and we're lucky enough here, even though we don't have a lot of huge stage races in the country, we have some really good people who come back every event for us and have just got a good game plan in place.
Well, let's talk about that, because I don't think that people understand what goes into organizing an event like this. For instance, you were telling me that you've got 10 CHP vehicles, California Highway Patrol vehicles, that follow you and help manage the caravan all the way from San Francisco down to Long Beach. Are these some of the same people year after year?
This year our team is about half new and half returning. Of course, they were all new last year with the first event. And we're lucky enough with the police agencies. We had Georgia State Patrol come out and actually work with CHP and help train them on some of the things they do. Actually, we have one of our Georgia State troopers here in our command vehicle helping us out today on vacation. So they do a fantastic job. I just can't say enough about what a great job they do for us.
And that brings up another great point. Here you've got the Georgia State Trooper. He's helping out. He's on vacation. I met some of your senior staff this morning. This is not their day job. They've got other jobs. How does that work?
Well, our Medal of Sports, who I work for, our key staff is we have 5 full-time employees, 2 of which are the owners of the company. So you can imagine we go from that. AEG, who owns the Event Anschutz Entertainment Group, has a pretty large staff, but we go from that core staff to almost 900 people event week. So by far the vast majority of folks who work this event are folks who have real jobs and they're taking vacation to come help us out.
Some of the unsung heroes of an event like this are your course marshals, people that are out there making sure that cars aren't on the road, making sure that the pedestrians and cyclists aren't on the road, making sure that the cyclists turn at the right places. And you were telling me you've got a core group of about 75 people who are course marshals. How does that work?
Yeah, we have a group, a lot returning, a lot new every year, and they basically take all of the smaller roads in conjunction with law enforcement and help us through the course. Usually they're going to be at 2 or 3 locations per day. It is a thankless job. They are really the ambassadors. A lot of cycling fans out there, but a lot of the general public who may not have ever seen a bike race coming through and may be inconvenient. So they do a lot of work to smoothly get us down the road.
So you mentioned your assistant technical director, Eric Smith, and you said that, you were telling me earlier, you really couldn't do this without him. Over 600 plus miles out here on the roads over a week. What kind of a job does he have to do for you?
Well, when we log the course, it's really easy for us to say we want to go here and there. And, of course, there's a lot of local governments. Eric works with all of the local communities, our pass-through communities on the permitting process. And that is just a monumental task in California, as you can imagine, and does a great job. And we really want this not just to be a, hey, we're coming through your town, but more of a benefit for the communities we pass through. Bring good crowds out, have them spend some money, and have a great day.
For the listeners, I'm going to get this up today, the end of stage number one. For those people who want to plan and go to the stage, since you know every mile of this course, give me an idea of what you think some of the most exciting racing, where some of the most exciting racing will be, and where some of the most scenic racing will be.
Well, it really depends, yeah, on what you want to see. If you're a sort of a novice fan and don't know the sport as much, a finish line might be a great area because you've got a lifestyle expo there, a great place to bring the family. The big screen TV is there every day. We've got race announcers who can tell you what's going on in the race. If you're the more experienced fan who doesn't mind standing on the side of the road, I think some of the great points, probably Sierra Road is going to become the pinnacle climb this year right outside of San Jose on stage 3. And the Solvang time trial, just a beautiful area there. But really, it's almost hard to say just because so many beautiful areas here in the state to view and to ride in.
And we were also talking about the stage from Santa Barbara to Santa Clarita, and we were talking that might be some really great climbing to watch. What do you predict for that stage?
That stage is very similar to what we had last year, except for the end. Up through the last KOM is similar to last year. We certainly saw some great action there. Balcom Canyon Road is becoming probably the fan area to see. It seems like not the most difficult climb in the world, but has turned into sort of a group party over the last year.
So if you're a partier, Balcom Canyon is the place you want to be. And as we dodge yellow cars and motorcycles here, I have to get back to the radios for a second because something that's near and dear to my heart. As you may or may not know, if you know about radios, you tend to speak on one frequency and then that's repeated back in higher power to you so that you can hear it over a wider area, and that's called a repeater. And Chuck, maybe you can tell me a little bit about what's unique about the repeaters that you use on the Tour of California.
Sure, we've got a pretty interesting radio net set up. We have 5 repeater channels, and normally a repeater is on top of a mountain somewhere, which moving 650 miles we can't do. So we do have a couple of aircraft up. One is a radio repeater, which is the radios you may hear in the background is relaying that information. We've also got another fixed wing up with microwave repeaters to send TV transmissions. So if you're lucky enough to catch the TV later tonight or even at the finish line, that signal's actually being bounced up off motorcycles in the field up to an airplane and then back down. A lot of stuff we hope goes right to get that signal back down to the finish line.
Amazing. And an amazing job that you've done. And just a few more days and you can actually get some sleep. So, Chuck, thanks for what you've done for the Fredcast and for what you've done for cycling fans with the Tour of California.
Great. I wish I could take some days off. We have Tour de Georgia starting in April, so not much vacation time coming, and we hope people can come to that event. It's another great one.
Excellent. We'll see you then. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Well, there I was at the finish line, and I ran into somebody that I've known about for a long time. We've sort of run parallel circles, but haven't actually met before. It was great to meet Samari Lewis. If you're not familiar with Samari, she is the so-called Velo Gal, the one who's written the Tour de France for Dummies. She also wrote the funny book, Podium Girl Gone Bad, and she's a great friend of Discovery, a great friend of Lance Armstrong, and she is also the host of her own podcast, the Velo Gal podcast. She also takes freelance photography, and so I caught up with her at the finish line and talked to her about her history with the Peloton as well as her predictions for this year's Tour of California. So here's my interview with Samari Lewis. What did you think of today's stage?
Well, I thought it was absolutely fantastic. The crash was just, it was such a bummer. Such a bummer. And I hear that Dave Zabriskie's out. You know, I spent about 10 hours with him and his now wife, but girlfriend then, Randy, in the emergency room pretending to be his mother so I could be there and give her support.
That was at the Tour de France.
No, that was down at Redlands when he crashed.
Oh, because he's just had his share of crashes.
He is just like, you know, the hard luck kid, but it was really funny. The funny part of the story is that I'm saying, yeah, I'm his mother, and so we're in the emergency room for about 4 hours, and the phone rings, and the nurse turns around and looks at us and said, it is David's mother on the phone. And I said, oh, well, you know, we have many mothers.
I'm his stepmother. So up until today's crash, it was really a pretty normal stage, except there was that huge headwind.
The headwind we all knew was going to make a big difference. And I'm sure the riders are like, oh, God, I'm glad this is over.
So tell me, because, you know, I've listened to your podcast and I know you've been around the Peloton for a while. How did you get started doing what you're doing?
Well, I actually got started. I went to the Tour de France, God, what was it, in 2000. And I stood beside the road with this huge 4-foot banner, bright yellow with, like, I don't know, 10-inch Go Lance and then LanceArmstrongFanClub.com. And I didn't really know that they noticed me that much. But Johan started blinking his lights at me, et cetera, et cetera. And when the stage was in Antwerp, I was standing outside the fence, you know, as always. And Lance sent one of his people over and invited me to come inside and come in the bus. And back then, the team bus was very, you know, it was not as accessible and open to people. So I was, like, speechless. So I went to the bus and climbed up the stairs, and there's Johan shaking his hand. And I looked down at the, you know, I think I shouldn't call it a bus, but anyway, and there were all of posties then. I think I'm the person who started the term posties for U.S. Postal. And there they were all sitting in their uniforms, just in their kits, just sitting looking at me, and I'm like, oh my God, what do I do? And Lance was sitting in the back, just kicked back with his arms up on the back of sort of a little couch back there, and you know, and I just said blah blah blah, I have no idea what I babbled, and then I left. It was great. So that kind of is how I got started.
And from there you've just become an insider among the Peloton.
Right. Well, I just did the training camp in Solvang, and I was telling Johan that this is my 7th year of being at the training camp. So the guys all like me. They trust me. I know what to say and what not to say. And it's just been really a wonderful privilege for me and a great association.
So here, besides the fan aspect of being here, you're working too. Tell us what you're doing.
Right. It just kind of evolved from being a fan, and it's been great. It's been positive, but in some ways it hasn't been as positive because I think I'm a little stereotyped as a fan rather than a working author and photographer, although I did co-author the Tour de France for Dummies, as you know. And Wiley did call me and ask me, and it's interesting they called because the guy who was the whatever editor had read my Podium Girl Gone Bad, and he was hoping to inject some humor into Tour de France for Dummies, but it didn't turn out quite that way. There were more than one authors.
But you're here taking photos as well.
I am. I'm taking photos, and I freelance, sell my photos. They've been in, you know, some of the major cycling magazines and online, and my photos are in Tour de France for Dummies. My photos were in Inside the Postal Bus, Michael Berry's book, and so my latest one is in Sacktown magazine. It's one I took at the Tour of California last year. So yeah, I sell velogal.smugmug.com.
We all have to do our plugs. Thank you. Thank you so much for taking the time. And you know, we're talking to a real Northern California local here. Do you have any predictions?
Well, I am looking at Levi.
I think we all are. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Very much. Thank you for talking with me.
And that's going to do it for our coverage of Stage 1 of the Amgen Tour of California. We'll be back again tomorrow with our coverage of Stage 2. Tomorrow we go from Santa Rosa, California, all the way up to the state capital in Sacramento. Be with us tomorrow again. Try to get the podcast out a little bit earlier tomorrow. Until then, if you'd like to send me some email, please do so. The email address is thefredcast@gmail.com. Of course, you can also send a voicemail to the Fredcast listener hotline. That's area code 206-203-FRED. And please check out the website at www.thefredcast.com. In a few moments, I'll be posting my best pictures from today's Stage 1. So until tomorrow, enjoy your Tuesday, but most of all, enjoy the ride.